Hello, and welcome to Basketball Intelligence's The Unrestricted Area. Don't forget to sign up at basketballintelligence.net to receive your daily newsletter with the day's best reporting and analysis. Today, we have on Fran Fraschilla, the longtime coach, scout, and analyst, to talk about his new role coaching the USA men's 3x3 team. We discuss the upcoming Olympics, the thrill of representing the USA, the shadow of the Serbians, how Fran developed his international scouting expertise, and how he shut down Michael Malone in college.
And an update. At around the 42-minute mark, we've also tacked on a short media session with Jimmer Fredette, held on September 30th before the 3x3 International Cup, which was hosted by the Sacramento Kings in Sacramento. Fredette has some fun thoughts on what drew him to 3x3, why he left China, his NBA and Olympic hopes, and more. Enjoy.
Hello, everyone. This is Ray LeBove, welcoming you to Basketball Intelligence's The Unrestricted Area podcast. Joining us today, co-host will be Mike Shearer, and our guest, who we're honored and privileged to have, is Fran Fraschilla. Most of you know Fran from his earlier incarnations as D1 coach at Manhattan, St. John's in New Mexico, where he had a 64% winning percentage and made the postseason each of the 10 seasons that he coached. And then even more visibly, I suppose, at ESPN, where he has done various roles. You probably know him certainly this time of the year as the leading draft expert. Certainly he's done play-by-play at various different levels for ESPN. We don't have time for me to give him the introduction that he deserves, so we're going to move on right now.
And a world-famous actor, it's probably worth pointing out.
That's right. co-hosting with Queen Latifah and Adam Sandler.
That's right.
In Hustle. Yeah, co-starring, I should say.
Men's 3x3 U.S. World Tour Director. I hope I got the title correct. And that's mostly what we're going to talk to Fran about today. And I think I'd like to start off, Fran, by asking how that came to pass. What was your interest and how did you wind up in the current position that you're in?
Well, Ray, you know enough about me to know that I'm the purest of purest basketball junkies, at any level. You know,
I'm always fighting for second place, but go ahead.
Yeah. And I've been around basketball since I was 14, and literally every single day of my life, I it's not the most important thing in my life, but certainly basketball plays a big part in my profession. I haven't worked a day in my life, obviously. And my enjoyment, you know, and so I take an interest in basketball at every level. As you know well, I was probably one of the earliest basketball people to dive into international basketball 20 years ago. And of course, I did the NBA draft for many years at ESPN. And ironically, this year, we're talking 3x3. I did very little draft work this spring, whereas I normally dive into it 6-7 hours a day because of my involvement with 3x3. So no elevator pitch here, as I explained. I'll go as much detail as I can. I'll shut up, let you and Mike ask me questions. But 3x3 became an Olympic sport in Tokyo. It's a half-court sport, 12-second shot clock. Like many of us grew up playing, you play to 21 or 10 minutes, whichever comes first. 1 point inside the arc, 2 points outside the arc. It's not make it, take it. It's transition basketball, you know, very fast paced. The best analogy I can give you guys is if 5-on-5 is the 1500 meters, 3x3 is the 200 hurdles. It's a very fast sport. It's highly conditioned. We play with 4 players on a team, 3 at a time. Literally, Ray, Mike, every time there's a dead ball, you have to sub, because guys are exhausted. So about 15 months ago, Jay Demings from USA Basketball, and I live in Colorado Springs where USAB is located. The Olympic training stuff is here. USOC is here. We had dinner one night in late February, and he said, would you want to get involved with this? It's an Olympic sport. We did not qualify on the men's side for Tokyo. We had some injuries. You remember Robbie Hummel, terrific player at Purdue, Canyon Barry, Rick Sun. Most recently, we've recruited Jimmer Ferdet, who's going to be phenomenal at this. So anyway, he asked me if I wanted to be involved, and it's something I've always wanted to. I love history. I love my country. I wasn't able at a young age when I was coaching to get involved with USAB. When it came to me, I said, this is perfect. It fits perfectly in my schedule. It's a summer and fall sport. It allows me to do my ESPN stuff, and I'm tickled to death that I'm part of USA Basketball.
Yeah, and just to reiterate for our listeners, like, if you haven't seen 3x3 before, it is so fast and so fun. And because it's basically a live ball, as soon as there's a made basket, you'll have sequences where, like, a player will drive, hit a layup, the other team will grab the rebound, kick it out to their shooter, and he'll nail a two-pointer. And there's a huge swing right there, and it happens in the span of seconds. So even though it's a 10-minute game clock, it feels just nonstop action, frantic pace. It's a blast to watch.
It is. And it took time to get used to, Mike. You know, like my assistant coach happens to be my son, James, and no nepotism here. I didn't really want to hire him, but James was James has worked with USA in the past. He was Jeff Van Gundy's video coordinator with the World Cup 5-on-5 team. And James coaches in the G League. He's a great young coach. And I say that because I never really talked about him before, but he's just, and he's become the foremost expert on 3-on-3 really in our country. And so he's my assistant coach. We've studied it the last 15 months. We're learning the nuances of the game. There's a lot of two and three man plays and 3-on-3 that fit 5-on-5. So there's a great interest there. And the other thing, Mike, I would say, to your point, it is a great player development tool for 5-on-5. Mm. It is fast. The 12-second clock shot clock makes you make quick decisions. Most of our guys are between 6'3 and 6'7 because of the nature of the game. You wouldn't want a 3,000 meter guy running the 200 hurdles. But we've gone out and recruited some bigger guys who are really athletic that I think are going to have an impact on our team as we head on to this FIBA 3x3 World Tour here in mid June.
Brian, can you speak to what your duties and responsibilities are? I know that they're part administrative, part coaching, part something else. I don't know, part recruiting.
Recruiting.
So can you speak to all the duties and responsibilities?
Absolutely, Ray. You know, the craziest thing about this is I told you there's no elevator pitch. So when we talk to a high-level G League guy who still thinks he wants to play in the NBA, and we tell him, you can do this in the summer, we'll pay you to play, and you'll have a chance to win prize money. We played in three tournaments last summer with G League guys, and they made 40 grand. They made as much as they did in the G League. This summer, we're planning on playing with two teams anywhere from 6 to 10 tournaments on this FIBA World Tour. So I've had to recruit these guys, like a Jimmer Ferdet, who's retired and who lives up in Denver now with three beautiful kids and his wife, Whitney. And I said, look, if you do this in the summer of 23, you do this for 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 weeks, you could be on our Olympic team. You know, you could literally be good enough to be on our Olympic team. So I'm a recruiter. I'm convincing these guys this is a great summer opportunity, great chance to make money, represent your country, and be the first team to qualify the USA for 3-on-3 in the Olympics. That's the first thing. I'm coaching it with my son, James. So we've studied the game. The best teams are in Europe, Serbia, Lithuania, Latvia. I've studied those teams for 15 months, the way you'd study the Miami Heat or the Denver Nuggets. So I'm learning the game. We're obviously coaching it with training camps. We have a training camp coming up this week in Miami before we head overseas. So a lot of different hats still under the auspices of USA Basketball, which is like the biggest thrill for me.
Yeah, I think one thing that you touched upon a little bit, but I want to dive into more, is around maybe what some of the differences are from a recruiting standpoint and a coaching standpoint. So just as an observer, one of the things I note is that, like, hey, the players, and you touched upon this a bit, but the players have to be well-rounded. In 3-on-3, there's no room for specialists, right? So everybody has to be able to handle, everybody has to be able to defend, et cetera. So I'd like to hear a little bit more about your thoughts on what the differences are.
Another interesting point, Mike, because in 3x3, there's no coaching.
Mm.
You coach in the practice and you coach in your training camp. When the game starts, it's just the four guys out on the court. I sit in the stands like
tennis style.
Yeah, I sit in the stands like you know, Djokovic's coaches at Wimbledon. You know what right. I mean? I'm biting my nails in the stands and they put the camera on you. So there's no, it's a player driven game. They make their adjustments during the game. They run the plays that we worked on in practice. So I sit in the stands once the game starts and it's aggravating, to be honest. It's nerve-wracking.
Sure it is.
I never got nervous coaching because you don't have time to get nervous. With this, I'm a total wreck. So that's the fun part, but it's also why the game is great for players, because it creates this high IQ basketball that they all learn how to play with. And that's what I think is a big selling point, because we have a veteran team called Miami, which is Jimmer's team. And they just competed in the World Cup. Then we have a second USA team called Washington, D.C. And those are mid-20s G League guys who still have hopes of playing in the NBA. You know, for example, we will not have a tournament during NBA Summer League to travel to, because four of our six guys will be on Summer League teams. So we got all this going on with players and recruiting and development and teaching them how to play. And yet they're going to go likely back to the G League or maybe an NBA team in the fall and winter and try to reach the other dream. But the hook for us is it's a great summer job. It'll be great for your conditioning and player development. And we're going to pick six guys to represent the United States in Paris if we qualify.
I'd like to follow up a little bit on the coaching aspect.
Yeah.
Clearly you're not allowed to, and there's no room to coach during right. games. And I'm sure you don't cheat anywhere near as much as tennis coaches do in terms of coaching from the stands.
Well, look, here's a play call. See, look, this is a play call. They look in a stand. See, here's a play call. But no, we don't call plays out. No.
Right. So what are the differences in your approach in coaching, not at the games, but yeah. in preparing, than as opposed to what you would do when you're coaching more traditional styles of basketball?
Well, first of all, I think the best coaching is less is more at any level. And I think when you have smart players, and we have all the guys on our team are professional basketball players. Charlie Brown has been in the NBA with the Hawks and the Sixers, and most recently won a G League title in Delaware. You know, Keaton Wallace, whose little brother will be a lottery pick this week, Kaysen. Keaton's averaged 18 a game for 2 years with the Clippers G League team. You know, Robert Baker, former Harvard guy, obviously a smart player, you know, averaged double figures in Lakeland this year for the Magic. So, and others, our other guys are good players too. Devin Kennedy has been in the NBA, played for South Bay this past year, a former Princeton guy. We may have some problem with the Princeton and Harvard guys.
Hey, I went to Yale. I want you to recruit some of them.
Oh, there you go. See, okay. There you go. So, but here's the point, Ray. When you have guys that are already professionals, they understand switching and pick and roll basketball and playing two-man basketball. So we give them an outline of how we want them to play. But the beauty of this is once you're on the court with three other teammates, you're kind of on your own. Not much different than when I was growing up in a playground in Brooklyn 50 years ago, and you want to stay on the court all day. Nobody's coaching me then. We're just learning how to play together. So that's what makes this sport so fun and unique. The other thing that's going on is it's carnival atmosphere. There's music going on. It's like the old street ball stuff and Gus Macker back in the day. So there's a lot of like carnival atmosphere here. And the reason FIBA came up with 3-on-3 is they thought it would be great for smaller countries. Like it's really big in Mongolia. They love 3-on-3.
Yeah.
Latvia, places like that, where it's not easy to get 12 or 15 guys to play 5-on-5 all the time. Now, given that it's an Olympic sport and they probably don't really want us to dominate 3-on-3, and we certainly don't yet, it's still an Olympic sport. So by our nature, we want to be good at this.
Sure.
Yeah, some of the things that you said there reminded me of a conversation you had with maybe the greatest 3x3 player of all time, Dusan Bulut. I think I butchered his name, right? But you had asked.
Dusan, you got it, Bulut, yeah.
Yeah, he is, for those who don't know, he's like, you know, a hair over 6 foot, and he's a Serbian guard who's just an absolute legend in the sport. And you'd asked him maybe a year or two ago if he ever wanted to get into coaching, since he is such, yeah, you know, an important figure. And yeah, he basically, I'm paraphrasing here, but he basically was like, no, I don't think that coaching belongs in the on-court product of 3x3. Yeah. To me, it's always been about like the street ball aspect. You go out there, the players know what to do, and I want to see what they can do, what kind of like joy they can make together. And I just thought that was such an interesting perspective. And it's so different than the established, you know, 5-on-5 things we have in America.
It's a great point, Mike. And, you know, he's actually a great teacher of the game. But one of the reasons he left 5-on-5, and anybody who knows Serbian basketball knows Serbian coaches are, you know, mm-hmm, tough guys, and you have to do what they say or otherwise forget it. And, right, you know, Dušan, who's actually going to play Big Three again this year for the third summer, he's in Big Three, right?
Yeah.
But Dušan is one of those guys that got more joy on the playgrounds of Novi Sad, which is a Serbian community. It's kind of like Brooklyn, you know. A lot of apartment buildings and projects, we would call them, asphalt playgrounds. And it's a street game to a lot of those kids. So there is coaching. There is like nuances of pick and roll and playing two-man basketball. But once that game starts, I think the joy of the game for these guys like Dušan and these other guys is there's a freedom to create. You know, I'm always thinking of like, White Chocolate, Jason Williams would have been great at this. You know, Jimmy Butler would be great at this because he's the perfect size, 6'6", and could score inside, could make a three, could get into the mid-range, could guard all three positions. So it gets back to what I said. This is not the 1,500 meters, man. This is the 200 hurdles.
So you mentioned about the various teams that some of the players are on domestically here.
Yeah.
Could you clarify what the relationship is between having those multiple teams and having the USAB main team, et cetera? How does that all relate to each other?
What I love about you and Mike today, Ray, is your curiosity, because these are exactly the questions I have to explain to agents and players. Okay. And that's why I love what I do, because there's a sales aspect here. We are connected, USA Basketball, with the NBA and by nature, the G League. Right. So Brad Jones from the NBA office, who's a really good guy, lives in Orlando. He's been in with number of teams. Brad is our liaison to the NBA. So when we, for example, a kid who goes overseas to play that's been a great college player and leaves in August doesn't help us much, because our 3x3 season goes into October. So the G League guy is perfect. So for example, if we were to get to the World Cup final in Abu Dhabi in December, which is a big payday, I think $100,000 pot, and then we would add to it, USA Basketball adds a stipend to that. We will get permission from the G League and the teams, the GMs. Hey, we need this guy for a week. He's going to represent the United States in Abu Dhabi. Not unlike what Jimmy Boylan had to deal with in February with the window to qualify for 5-on-5, where, you know, if you're a G League team, you lose your guy for a week because he's playing for the USA 5-on-5 team. So we have a great relationship with the league. We're not at the point where we can get Jimmy Butler or DeMar DeRozan to play in the Olympics for us yet, but who knows? You know, LA is in 28.
Yeah.
And if we qualify for Paris and we do well, you might have some NBA guys say, look, I can devote a month or two of this to my summer. But right now it's important to have the best ability for us is availability. So we don't want a guy that's leaving in August to go play in Germany when we can get a guy who's already in the G League. And all the guys that we have vetted, we've asked them and their agents, what's your plan? We plan on going back to the G League next season. And oftentimes it's the quickest way back to the NBA. Mm-hmm. And we might lose a guy to a two-way deal. Very possibly, but we have contingencies for that. We have guys ready to fill in on the pipeline, good players. But so that's what we have a relationship with the NBA that's very similar to when they put the 5-on-5 World Cup and Olympic teams together. Mm.
So one of the things that's interesting about 3x3 is that it's well-established and very big and growing in Europe, particularly, Asia.
In Asia.
Yep. Yes. But, you know, obviously it hasn't had a foothold in the United States for very long. So I'd love to hear from you a little bit about what you think are some of the challenges and opportunities you have to kind of grow the sport of 3x3 over the next couple of, maybe, you know, 12 months or 24 months, particularly leading up into the Olympics in Paris?
Well, good question, Mike. Who's the best women's volleyball player in the country right now? I know it's a trick question. I think it's a girl named Rodriguez from Nebraska. Okay. And I say that to you because it's no different than 3x3. Like, this is a fun sport. And by the way, volleyball, beach volleyball, there's another parallel, right? You could be a really good volleyball player, but you might not have the enjoyment that you have playing beach volleyball. So, and I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but here's my point. We're trying to grow this sport so that when the Olympics turn around, this young lady from Nebraska, who's likely to be an Olympian, we'll know about her in Paris, right? We just, you know, a USA won the gold in Tokyo, probably be favored again in Paris. Not unlike what we're trying to do. Now, one of the key guys to this, and I'm not saying he's automatically going to be on the Olympic team, but if you've watched him play, he's taken to this sport. Everybody knows Jimmer Fredette. You know, so when people see me on Twitter tweeting out something about USA 3x3, or someone finds out that Jimmer Fredette's playing, it's kind of cool. And so, right. But to your point, which again, didn't mean to mock you, wasn't trying to do that at all. It's the idea is to let people know this is a fun sport. So hope you follow it. And those young guys that are in college now, playing in the G League, playing overseas, we've talked to some guys that are retiring from 5-on-5 overseas. If I told you a couple names, you'd know them instantly. So this is a unique situation, because if you think you're going to be in the NBA, you probably don't want to do this. But if you're not sure, and this is something where you can tell your kids and your grandkids, I played in the Olympics in Paris or LA, that's kind of one of those hooks right now. So we're trying to grow the sport. I think, honestly, I say this humbly, but I have nearly 200,000 followers on Twitter. I don't know how. I have no idea how that happened. But I think it happened, Ray and Mike, because you know, because people know I love basketball.
Sure.
They know I love giving back. They know I love promoting the joy of the game. And so one of the things I try to do in my role, not only coach it and recruit, but, you know, be an apostle for the sport and pass on the good news of 3x3, to paraphrase my Bible, you know. But yeah, that's what I'm trying to do, is really try to grow this sport. Because people know that I have a joy for the game. And if I'm involved, there must be something good about basketball here.
So, Fran, just because you are too humble, I will say one of the reasons that you have, or the main reason probably you have 200,000 connections on or followers on Twitter, is if someone wants to understand the game better, they're going to connect to the people who can explain it the best.
Yes.
That's a huge part of why you have 200,000 followers.
Well, remember, Ray, that's the reason why I so enjoyed my 12 years at ESPN as the international draft guy, because I'm not involved with the draft anymore. That's a whole nother story. I don't know how that happened, but I did it at an all-star level for 12 years because I had so much passion for international hoops.
Absolutely.
Before anybody except a few NBA scouts and a few GMs really knew about what was going on over there. Now, I don't even think ESPN needs an international scout, because
now they need a domestic scout.
Well, I won't even go there, but I would just simply say that in my basketball role, I've been able to wear so many great hats.
Right.
And now I get to do this. And, you know, I did the Olympics, the last two Olympics for NBC, and I haven't told them this yet, but I plan on not being a broadcaster next year, because I plan to help us get to Paris with the 3-on-3. So it's what I love. I love the game. I love sharing it. I love explaining it. In this case, I love explaining a sport that's not only new to us, but could eventually someday, you know, catch on. I don't want it to pass 5-on-5, but you know, if you love volleyball, you probably love beach volleyball too. You know,
there's room.
If you love track and field, you don't just love the 3,000 meter steeplechase. You like the 110 meter hurdles, or the 100 meter dash. So, you know, if you like, in Europe they call it athletics. They don't call it track and field. But if you like track and field, you know, there's so many different parts of track and field. It's why we love the Olympics. And, you know, maybe that's my role here with 3x3.
So what is the path for us going forward to qualifying? I know the World Cup just happened, and if anybody listening is interested, the World Cup, U.S. women's team, I believe, won gold. They traditionally have been very strong, which is awesome. And the men's team had an awesome showing as well, and Frank can speak to them more. But it went down to the wire against Serbia. The game is on YouTube, I think. The whole game is about a 17 or 18-minute video, and you guys should all watch it. It's incredible. Incredible game, really fun to watch. But I am curious to hear maybe a little bit about your experiences with that. And then just, like, what do we need to do to get to the Olympics?
You know, Mike, these questions are unbelievable because these are exactly the same ones I have to explain. First of all, if you're really a junkie, FIBA 3x3 YouTube. You can actually watch the tour weekend by weekend. We'll be in Orleans, France, not this coming weekend, not this weekend, but next weekend. And then we'll be in Portier the following weekend in France. All these games are live. You got to adjust for time schedules, obviously. But if you go back and look up Serbia USA from the World Cup final 3 weeks ago, whatever that was, early June, I think, you'll be able to see that final. And you're right, that game went really quickly because it was so much great shot making. So that was a great question. FIBA 3x3 on YouTube, you can follow everything. All the games are cataloged back the last couple of years also. Now, how do we qualify? 3x3 only takes 8 countries. I think, I'm not sure of this, but I think the Olympics have gotten it down to like from 16 to 12 on 5-on-5. I'm not sure, but I know they reduced the number of teams that now qualify for 5-on-5. Meanwhile, the World Cup is going to have like 50 countries, right? Or really 32 or something like that. So only 8 teams might qualify for FIBA 3x3. The top 3 teams in the World Cup that just finished, we all get automatic bids to the World Cup qualifying next spring. So that's, we earn that. That's kind of cool.
That is good.
There'll be other qualifying tournaments next spring also for some smaller countries. But here's the beauty of 3x3. The top 3 point getters in by country, and you get points for participating in events. The more teams you send, the better. We'll have 2 USA teams on tour. We'll have a couple of other independent USA teams. The more teams we send and the better we do, the more points we get for our country. Currently, we're 2nd in the world behind Serbia. Lithuania is 3rd. As we start the summer tour, when we get to November 1st, if we are one of the top 3 countries in points by country, we'll get an automatic bid to Paris. That's our goal right now. We'd rather not play our way in. USA has made a USA Basketball has made a commitment to put 2 very good teams on tour. The team that just lost the heartbreaker in the gold medal game was actually beaten in Colorado Springs by the 2nd team, Washington, D.C., that we'll put on tour also. We're a little younger, a little quicker, maybe not as savvy as Jimmer's team, but we will actually compete against each other on the world tour this summer. But when we're not playing against each other, we're rooting like hell for both teams to do well. The higher we finish each week in these tournaments, the more points we get. And on November 2nd, I want to be qualified for Paris. It would be a great goal. It would take a lot of stress off us, but we've got a busy summer ahead to work at it. And by the way, the host country gets an automatic bid also, which is France. So, we're heading in the right direction from a standpoint of qualifying, but we've got a lot of work this summer.
So the multiple teams, U.S. teams that tour, what's the relationship? Are they all under the same auspices? Are they under different? And how's that collaboration work, et cetera?
Well, there's definitely tension, but it's a great tension. For example, I coached the USA team in the FIBA Americas last November. Jimmer Fredette, Canyon Barry, Kareem Maddox, former Ivy League Player of the Year, Princeton. Dylan Travis, former Division II All-American at Florida Southern. I coach those guys. Those are my guys, so to speak. And they also are our guys because it's USA Basketball. They're coached on tour now. And they were coached by Joe Lewandowski, who was a terrific player in college. He's an Ohio guy who lives in Pittsburgh. Joe's going to coach that team this summer. Miami. I'll coach Washington, D.C. we will train together next week in Miami. And we want them to do well. I'm just telling you, we do. But we're going to see them at some point, maybe not until a championship, hopefully. But if and when we see them play in one of these tournaments together, we're going to try to beat the hell out of them. But they're going to try to beat the hell out of us. Mm-hmm. The good news is we love those guys. It's USA Basketball. What we plan on hoping to happen, Ray, is if we qualify in November, all of these guys will have played enough on the circuit that then it's going to be a tough decision. But of the 8 to 10 guys that maybe or 12 total that represent us this summer, maybe a couple independent guys who are really good, we'll have a group of 12 guys with which to pick 6 from for the Olympic team. So we don't know where they're going to come from, which team. But all I know is the more we both play, the better we get. The more we play each other, the better we get. And so it's fun because anybody would want to play on an Olympic team, but we're only going to be able to pick 6 of those guys. Mm.
So, Fran, we've covered a lot.
Yes.
Certainly nowhere near everything that should or needs.
By the way, Ray, I think Victor Wembanyama is going to be the number one pick. So just a little draft, you know, usually you get me for 45 minutes on the draft. I wanted to throw that out there, and I would take Scoot Henderson 2nd, Brandon Miller 3rd. So,
you know, you can take the draft out of Fran, but you can't take Fran out of the draft.
I know most every player. I say this humbly, you know, it's not going to happen. You know, I don't know why ESPN did what they did. I think it had to do with Woj. That's fine. Woj is a friend. He brought his own people, but you could stick me on their draft night and I would not embarrass myself.
Oh, no.
I don't need a note. And by the way, I don't need a researcher either, like some of those guys need. I'm very comfortable in my skin doing this USA stuff. And, you know, maybe someday when – if I win an Olympic gold medal, maybe somebody at ESPN or another network might say, you know what, this guy knows a lot of basketball. We need to put him back on. But I am totally happy with what I'm doing. If my career, and by the way, I may get let go tomorrow because they haven't chopped everybody off yet, right, at ESPN. But I am totally happy with my career.
Oh, God, yeah.
I do this with great joy, and I'm a little cynical there, you can tell. But having said that, I've got a great joy for what I'm doing. And thank you, ESPN, for hiring me for 20 years. Hopefully it'll be a 21st year.
And I remember quite a few years ago, like 4 or so, when you and I had our first conversation about Victor, and no one else knew who he was.
Yeah.
We had a great conversation about him.
I have. And, you know, there's a couple people that are really invested in this, you know, like Mike Schmitz did a great job at ESPN and he moved on. That's cool. For about 15 years, nobody knew the guys internationally the way I did. Even the guys that went over there all the time, just simply because I had incredible connections. Like Victor's agent, Buna Njai, lives in Dallas. We got to be very close through the years. I mean, he and Rudy Gobert, you know, robbed the Utah Jazz. They stuck a gun to the Jazz head and made them pay, you know. And, you know, Fournier and Kevin Seraphine and, you know, some of those other guys, Koulibaly, who's going to be a first-round pick, who played with Victor this year. So Buna and I have been friendly for a long time. By the way, when I was living in Dallas, Victor and a lot of these kids used to train at SMU where my boys used to work out when they were playing high school and college. So all of Booner's French kids particularly have come through Dallas in the summer, and I got to know those guys. But I had other connections too, former players who were coaching over there, playing over there, scouting for NBA teams. I was very lucky that I had really good information, not because of me, but because of my network of people.
Yeah, well, the – pods that we've done with you in the past that were draft centric were great. Yeah. Really appreciated your doing that. We're lucky this year we've got Kristen doing our pre-draft.
Excellent. Kristen does
and
a good
we've
job.
Got Adam Spinella doing our post-draft.
Should be with an NBA team. He probably will be someday soon. You know, Adam is a very, very smart young guy.
Yeah.
He's low ego. He checks his ego at the door. Probably somebody's going to hire Adam someday soon because he's humble. He puts a lot of work in. He knows what he's doing. He knows projection. He knows development. He knows basketball.
Can you imagine how hard he must work to do his full-time job of coaching as well as producing something, it seems like, just about every day?
Well, you know, it's funny. Yes, it is. And he does an amazing job. And I have to tell you, ESPN has no idea. I used to put six, eight hours a day in the minute the season ended. I mean, by the time I got to the NBA draft, I did the combine for a while, but also see, I coached and I had 18 NBA players, you know, and I have friends who coach in the NBA. There's guys that, you know, Michael Malone, I've known his dad for 40 years. And then Michael's senior year at Loyola Maryland was my first year at Manhattan College. We shut his ass down. He couldn't even get a shot up. You know? And then Michael coached at Manhattan College after I left there.
Great.
So I've been really lucky through the years. This is 40 plus years. I have a lot of contacts, a lot of great friends. So I always brought good information to the broadcast. It was never fake. It was never guessing. I've had to shut down many people who asked me this year to do podcasts. I said, I can't, you know, I told you I'm as much as I could fake it.
Yeah.
I've devoted 3-on-3 time since April. And I want to
coach. You set a standard that only you could meet.
for myself.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny because I just had lunch with a couple of NBA people here, good friends of mine. And they asked me about different guys. I said, hey, I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know that kid well. Right. I've seen him play. And the point is, I never
want. You're not going to fake it. Right.
Yeah, I never wanted an NBA GM, a lot of these guys are friends, to say, Fran doesn't know what he's talking about. So they could have differed with my opinion, for example, on Giannis on draft night. Okay, check that YouTube out. Okay? but they and or Bruno Caboclo, which brought some hard feelings with my Raptor friends. I hope they're over it. My son James works Pascal Siakam out 5 days a week in Orlando, and they've gotten to be very close. But I had to say stuff that I believed in my heart.
Sure.
And I am wrong. Like all of us, I am wrong, but I also put a lot of time in, and I was right a lot because I had 40 years worth of experience of watching players play. So
absolutely. Yeah. Right. We're all human. We're going to make mistakes occasionally. Totally. Right. That's part of the human condition, but the percentage of the time you were right is probably without equal. So.
Well, speaking of Bruno, I've got a feeling that USA 3x3 is not 2 years away from being 2 years away. We are right on the brink of something special here, from what I can tell.
Thank you, Mike. I'll tell you, we've studied hard. My son James has done an amazing job. Sadly, I didn't push him. He's been in the G League. He's been at Indiana with Tom Crean. He works out NBA players, you know, most days in Orlando in the offseason. He was in Grand Rapids this year with the Nuggets. And, but we are on it. We study those Serbian guys. They don't even know how much we watch them. They put their practices on Facebook, you know, and we watch every practice, and they're going to find out because we really respect them.
Sure.
When I took over at St. John's,
they're the legends.
Well, they are. And when I took over at St. John's as a young coach, I said, who's the bully on the block? It was Jim Calhoun in UConn. Okay, let's go. Let's go, MFers. Can I say that?
For sure.
I'm not going to curse. But that's what you do. You figure out who the best is, and you try to emulate them. And sorry about that MFers thing. But
it's good.
But in all honesty, like, Serbia is the best at this. So we try to study them, figure out what they're doing well. We're more athletic. We're probably more talented. But that doesn't mean a thing in 3x3 because this game is so fast. If you don't adjust to what they're doing, hey Ray, it's the old guys that came back in the summer at the schoolyard who went off to college, or they played in college. They made a lot of money on Wall Street, but they're still playing on the weekend, and you can never beat them. That's kind of what we deal with the Serbians.
Well, the NBA should probably be studying Serbia too, right?
Oh, trust me, I have sent video clips out through James to NBA head coaches. Seriously.
Yeah,
there's one guy who just took over in Atlantic. He would say, keep sending me more.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And so, you know, Quinn and David Fizdale and some of my other NBA friends, my G League friends, there's a lot of X and O and going on in 3x3 that is very viable for 5-on-5 if you know what you're doing, which most of those guys in the NBA, obviously almost all of them know what they're doing. So I'm sending this stuff out and we're kind of learning. And you know, I got good college coaches going, I can add that. That's a great quick hitter at the end of a game for a 3-point shot. So, you know, and by the way, I'll say this as we come down to the end here. I learn, I don't know about you, Ray, because you and I are, you know, same era. But I learned
something. I
learned something about basketball every week of my life.
Me too. Absolutely.
And I'm always trying to get better, and I'm always trying to pass it on. And guys like Mike who are just starting out, and, you know, no offense, Mike, but we're a lot older than you. But I say this humbly. I learn something about basketball all the time, and I like sharing it. So that's what I do now.
You'll remember that when we first met at Pro Scout School many years ago.
Yes.
And I was probably the only person in my age graphic. There was one other person, and everybody else was there because they were trying to get a gig, which was fine. It made sense. But I wasn't making a career change at that age.
You were trying to get better.
But I, as I told you, like networking, yes, but also I can always learn something, right?
Yeah.
So that, that's
the beauty of the game is every week I learn something. I think, damn, I wish I knew that when I was coaching.
Exactly.
But when I learn it and I see it and study it, I send it out on Twitter, or I'll pass it out to a coach's clinic. I'll do a Zoom call with coaches. And, you know, the greatest thing that, and you're what you do every day for people who love basketball is phenomenal basketball intelligence. But
thank you.
You know, in my own way, what I'm trying to do is give back and pay back, because I can't, I pay forward because you can't pay back oftentimes the people that help you through the years, you know? So this idea of paying forward for me has always been, you know, paramount. And as we study 3x3 and you guys followed along with me the next, you know, 12, 13 months, we're trying to get better.
Well, Fran, we know you've got a flight to catch to Miami to keep up with your 3x3 stuff. So we'll stop you here. But thank you so much for stopping in and chatting with Ray and I.
It's a pleasure, and really enjoyed it. And thank you for helping me share 3x3 with you guys and to all the BI people out there and all the people on your podcast.
What's your emotions going into coming back where it all started in Sacramento?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Well, I was at the hotel downtown, you know, Kempton. It's a nice new facility out there, right? It's obviously beautiful. And they're like, all right, we're going to go practice at the Stockton facility. But I didn't realize it was the old facility. So when we got here, I was like, so many memories that, you know, coming into the building and just seeing the locker room and the training room and all the stuff that, you know, I was here for 3 years, so remember it super well. And I love the city of Sacramento. The people here are amazing. They welcome my family. We still have great friends out here. And just an awesome experience to be able to start my career and get drafted here. So it's been cool to kind of reminisce a little bit.
I know you know, played in G1C a couple times, but it's kind of strange coming up here and not seeing that old barn.
Well, yeah, for sure. I come up here, I was like, where is, like, what happened, right? And I was, they're like, where's the arena? And I was like, well, it used to be right here, like 100 feet away, you know, so it definitely is a little bit weird. You know, obviously when you come in to the parking lot, it's so big, right? And there's just not a whole lot going on over there anymore, but it used to be packed with cars when we used to leave the games and everything. So yeah, it's definitely different.
What drew you to playing 3x3?
Honestly, the Olympics, right? Like that's the big draw. To be able to play basketball in the Olympics would be incredible. So that was what this whole thing started with. You know, I stopped playing overseas in China 2021 season. It was a COVID year and it was really difficult. I was away from my family for 7 months, didn't see them once. And at that point, I had 3 kids and I was like, I don't want to do that again, right? So I did it, and the 3x3 opportunity came, and it was a better opportunity to be with my family more. And a chance to play basketball in the Olympics. So that was the big two things.
I guess that's my whole thought process about this thing. You know, the way your career started off, you know, you played high school, you know, college, of course. Now it seems like you have found your niche, you know, in these type of games of competition. How do you explain that, you know, just being comfortable in what you're doing right now outside of professional basketball?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's interesting, you know, you never know what your path is going to take you. And the thing about for me is just whatever opportunity that I decide that I want to do, I'm going to go all in on, right? Like after the NBA, played in the NBA for 5 seasons, went over to China, really dove into the city of Shanghai and the CBA for 4 years, played in the EuroLeague for a year, came back and played in the NBA for a little bit, you know, so I've had a lot of opportunity, but like I said, whatever is in front of me, I want to make sure to go all in and make sure I'm making the most of it, and doing the same here with the 3x3, right? It's a professional league, it's a FIBA World Tour. There's really good players and really great teams. And it's something for me that I can get better at, right? Like, I can work at it. I'm, you know, obviously just starting to play it. So because of that, there's a lot to work on. And I like that as a person, just to be able to compete, get better as a player, and look at something that I can have some drive to push forward in. So it's been fun to be able to do that.
How much a 3x3 like feels new compared to it being just basketball?
Yeah, there's certain parts that are new and there's certain parts that are just basketball, right? Like screen and roll is just basketball. You know, shooting the three, it's just basketball. But no help side, that's not what I'm that's not normal, right? That's not 5-on-5 basketball. You're supposed to stick to your man. You don't help. You do not want to give up one for two, all these different things. There's a lot of different actions that happen in 3-on-3 that don't happen in the 5-on-5 game. So it's just all these things that you're kind of getting used to. But then once you get the ball in your hands, it's very, very similar. So that's the one thing that's fun about it.
How do you see this game like continuing to grow? Do you have people that reach out to you or anything like that, curious about how it works?
A ton, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's grown a lot this year. The tour has gotten better and better every year. Like, they've been doing it for probably 15 years now. Most people have no idea that that's been the case. But, you know, it started over in Europe, and then U.S. has been so young in it. But I think it's got some really good notoriety this year. When we played in the World Cup, you know, there was a lot of media attention that was there. ESPN is picking it up, all these huge social media sites picking it up, with millions of followers that are seeing that game and being like, oh, what is this? It looks kind of cool. There's a stadium, and, you know, it's outside, but it's covered with, you know, fans around the whole thing. It just feels like a cool atmosphere, which it really is. It's a lot of fun, but you feel every emotion in 3-on-3, that's for sure, because it's such a quick game. You never know what can happen, but it's been so fun, great experience, and the guys that I've been playing with have just been awesome.
What was the process like for you getting with this specific group of guys at Team Miami?
Yeah, it was just mostly a Team USA decision. So it was last November, about almost a year ago, we played in the AmeriCup, which was against all the Americas, played in a big tournament down in Miami. They put our team specifically together to play that. So we played it, and we ended up winning it. And then at that point, they're like, all right, this is our best team to put forward in the World Tour. So they put us in the World Tour, and we've been playing, you know, for the last 5 months all over the world, which has been an experience.
If you are able to make it to the Olympics, will you feel that pressure of representing Team USA and showing that the Americans is the best in basketball?
it's interesting because we're not the best in 3-on-3, right? Like, and that's the difference, right? Like I said, we've been young, and Serbia has been the team that kind of invented the game and kind of just have been out there kind of running a lot of these tournaments and everything. But I feel like we've made some really great strides, and now we're playing some good basketball. And obviously in the World Cup, had the USA jersey on and played for USA. We ended up taking second in that tournament, really close game, won the AmeriCup in a USA jersey. So every time you put that jersey on, it means more. We understand that, and that's the type of pressure that you want. It's a privilege to be able to play for Team USA and put that jersey on. So anytime you can do that, especially in the Olympics, you're gonna, you know, have a heightened sense of pressure. But I think that's a good thing, for at least for me it is.
When you play in a 3-on-3, I mean, you basically got to be everywhere. I mean, as far as rebounding, shooting, assists, you know, everybody has to have a part in it. Is that correct?
100%, yeah. Like, you got to be able to do everything, right? So there's some games where you're going to switch on defense and you're going to have to play bigger guys. There's some games where it's like, all right, we have to go over, so you got to fight over and get over your man, and that's exhausting. But it's something that you have to be able to adapt really quickly on the fly and be able to do all different skill sets, play multiple positions, know when to take fouls, when not to take fouls. All those things come into play, but you have to be cerebral when you play the game, for sure. And so it's something that I feel like I've been able to pick up pretty well. But I always have been a really skilled player. Like, I wouldn't be able to make where I was looking at me without being a skilled basketball player. So I feel like it fits kind of into my skill set and how I play.
With you being a shooter, how much, like, what do you think of the value of long range with it being 2s and 1s?
Yeah, it's double, right? Like, it's way more than the NBA. So it's analytically, right? Like, you can get more shots up from 2 than the other team. You probably have a better chance to win, right? And depending on how good the ones are that you're taking. But it's all about trying to find really good looks from 2. And that's something that I can do. I can create my own shot and come off of screens, whether it's a ball screen or a down screen, and be able to shoot 2s, which makes me a threat. And it also makes that guy that set the screen for the slip for a wide open layup a threat. So it's a lot of different things that go into it, but it definitely puts a lot of pressure on the defense.
So do you ever just aside from a 3-on-3, you don't mind me asking, out of respect.
Yeah, of course.
Did you ever get, you know, that thought in your head that you're going to get a call again from the NBA?
Honestly, at this point, no. I don't think that. I mean, they've had a chance for a long time at this point, and so I completely get it. I understand that's not my aspiration or anything at this point. You know, right now it's literally just about trying to make the Olympics. That's my goal. If a team wants to call me, great. I mean, I'm always prepared. I'm always ready. But, you know, it's more of the fact that I'm really enjoying this. I'm having fun. And, you know, doing something that is that I love, playing basketball and doing it in a different setting, but it's a new challenge. So yeah, I used to think about it, but at this point, honestly, it's way back in the past at this point.
I do want to say this too, you know, before this scrum in, you've always been a professional since you came around here, and I always appreciate it.
Yeah.
You know, you never talked bad about anybody. You know, you was always kind and pleasant.
Yeah.
You know, to the press, whether it's a hard question, a softball question,
sure.
You answered every question.
Well, I appreciate that. That's the biggest thing for me is being a good person. That's what people are going to remember. I'll play this game for a few more years and then be done. And then what do they remember about you, right? They remember how you treat you. And that's something that's the most important to me. Life is life. Basketball is basketball. You know, like I said, whatever happens, it happens. You just keep rolling with the punches. Be frustrating, it could be difficult, but it doesn't mean you can treat people wrong. So that's the biggest thing for me.
You were talking about the differences between 5-on-5, 5x5, 3x3, and as you've played more and more 3x3, do you still feel that sometimes the instinct to do a 5x5 thing,
yes,
or 100%. Totally transcended that?
No, 100%. There are some times where I'm like, oh, I'm helping too much, right? Or I'm not attached to my guy too much. Or there's a screen rescreen and you're not, you know, up on your guy, and you can be more physical in 3-on-3. You can push a little bit more, right? Like, you do all these things, so it's different. And no, for sure, I'm not 100% yet, but that's why I like it, because yeah, I can get better at it. I can focus on little things that can help, you know, me in my game and help our team win. So all those things are things that I'm trying to consciously work at. Now it's becoming more second nature, right? I've been doing it for, you know, six months or so now. You know, so I always say it takes like 3 months every day to work on something to create a habit. So I'm past that point, and I'm trying to continue to, but it doesn't mean that you know,
it's not an overnight thing.
Yeah, exactly. It takes some time.
Right.
So.
Thank you.
Yeah, just last one. Just talk about, you know, just that nostalgic feeling of being back in Sacramento and playing, obviously, the Golden One Center, not Arco, but
the Golden One Center. Yeah, for sure. Just the city itself, coming into the airport and, you know, making the drive to downtown. I used to live in Land Park. So I was there for 3 years. Loved that area. So just being able to drive down and see all the restaurants and all the places that I love to go eat. My wife is like, you got to go to Makuni's, you got to go to McDonald's, you got to go, you know, all the places. And I'm like, all right, yeah, I know. I'm going to take the guys to all the spots, right? And I understand that. So so it's great to be able to reminisce. And I'm telling the guys about the stories that happened just right here, right? Like, this is where I was at, so.
That red bunny home when you get into SMF, I've seen that red bunny.
I know, exactly. See all the stuff, so it's good.
Appreciate it.